In this election, we each face a question. What kind of country do we want to live in? We choose freedom. The freedom not just to get by, but get ahead. The freedom to make decisions about your own body. We believe in the promise of America, and we're ready to fight for it. Because when we fight, we win.
I'ma keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves.
Paid for by Harris for President.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 2 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you so very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. As always, feel free to reach out, jeff@beekeepingfornewbies.com, or hit us up at beekeepingfornewbies, that's newbies.com. About halfway down on the left, there's a link to the Discord room. If you'd like to join us over there, we'd love to have you. Well, today we are talking about episode 56, Where in the World Do I Put This Hive? The idea to do this episode actually came from some work I've been doing, going back and updating a lot of my original recordings. When I first started this a few years ago, I had no idea how to record anything. I just took whatever was handy and started recording and had no idea what volume levels were supposed to be where. I'm still very much a rookie. I still kind of have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm a few steps ahead of where I was. So I was going back and I was fixing some of the audio. In the process of that, I think it was episode 6, where it talked about hive placement, or at least in title. And I felt like there were a lot of voids, there were a lot of gaps. I know there were some things I discussed later on, but they weren't really in the episode that was supposed to be about, you know, where to put your hives. So I thought, let's go ahead and do a little bit of a recap, maybe add a couple of new things, get a little bit more detail, and hopefully this will be of some benefit. So let's go ahead and just jump right in. I think the most important thing that you have to do when you're deciding whether or not you want to keep bees at your home or wherever the location is that you want to keep them, you have to know what the local laws, ordinances, rules, HOA things, whatever governs your area, you've got to do that research up front. It's really easy to sneak a hive somewhere, even two or three. Most people aren't going to notice them or have any idea that you have them unless you tell them. But it's one of those things where sooner or later, somebody's going to find out, then you look like the bad guy. So make sure you check your local laws and ordinances before you even embark on this journey. I went and searched around a variety of different places in the U.S. and Canada, and I captured a bulleted list of just a few things that you're going to expect to see. Obviously, it's going to be different where you are, but just as some examples of things that are out there from a legislative standpoint governing how people keep honeybees. No more than 4 colonies. 10 meters from a highway. 30 meters from a property line. 10 feet from a property line. No closer than 50 feet from a house. Lot size must be at least a third of an acre. You have to have at least 2,000 square feet, and if you do, you can have up to 2 hives. You have to have at least 3 acres. No hive, this is one of my favorite ones. No hive shall exceed 20 cubic feet in volume. This is hands down my favorite one. I think it's safe to say that roughly about 30% of the world today can actually do that math. I mean, if I said to somebody right now, hey, this costs 30 cents, I'm going to give you a dollar, how much change should I get back? I really don't think most people can even make change for a dollar anymore. So the fact that somebody actually is going to calculate 20 cubic feet in volume, I found that to be very interesting. Another thing I noticed is that some places have mandatory or voluntary registration. I think if you're a commercial beekeeper, that certainly makes a lot of sense. I think if you want to take advantage of some of the resources that a lot of states have to you with your state apiarist or anybody within the state ag department, for those reasons, I think it does make sense to register them if you intend to use those resources. If you like to stay low profile, you don't want them bothering you, you don't want to bother them, I get it, don't register. But again, these are some of the things that I think that you may come across. Like I said, I've been pretty transparent on my feelings with regard to a lot of the arbitrary nature of some rules, ordinances, laws, and everything. But the reality is you have to have some kind of a framework. If you let people do whatever they want, you're going to end up with somebody who has like a, you know, like a 2,000 square foot lot with a 500 square foot trailer and a 50 colony B condominium on it that goes 30 feet up in the air or something. There's going to be something weird. So I get it, but hopefully you can work with your local legislators to help to educate them so that they can enact more common sense legislation around beekeeping. But like I said before, the key is just play by the rules, do the right thing. Because again, you don't want to be like me, right? So let's say you have the bees, they show up to harass you about them. And then while they're there, they're like, oh, your grass is too tall. And then they notice your grass because you like to let the natural flowers grow a little taller so you don't cut the grass as early. Then they see your boat trailer tag is missing because it's a permanent trailer tag and you don't want the tag to be stolen. So you take it off when you don't have it on the road. But they tell you that, hey, because it's on your property, it has to have a tag on it. And that's a citation. I wish I was actually making that up, but I got 10 citations in one day at my house because a neighbor complained about something. So they showed up, they ticketed me for like my boat being on a trailer. So that was one. You can't have a trailer beyond a certain line of your house. And then I didn't have the tags on the trailer. That was two. Then I had two trailers like that with small boats on them, like little John boats and stuff. So there were four citations right there. One of them was for a vehicle I had just donated to Disabled American Veterans, and it was sitting in my front yard with no tags on it, literally waiting for the guy to pick it up. So anyway, but again, if they have one reason to show up, they're going to harass you about something else. In an unrelated story, I installed a fence, planted 200 Leyland cypress trees and some Nellie Stevens hollies. So hopefully nobody will accidentally feel a need to call code enforcement anymore. But again, you don't want to give them a reason to show up and give you a hard time. All right, now that we have the legal stuff knocked out, let's get into the fun stuff. I really want you to view your beekeeping journey as if you were painting a portrait or building a house or doing some other creative type of project, right? Don't be bound by somebody telling you that you have to do it this way or you have to do it that way. You know, the whole, the only way to do this is to do it the way I do or all your bees are going to die. You know, are there bad things that you can do? Yeah. But a lot of the fear and doom logic that you hear from people is usually coming from people who need you to find them to be relevant in some way. And so that you'll keep coming back to them for advice because you're so afraid that if you do something on your own and you're wrong, that you'll just be doomed. If you go, well, you didn't listen to me, you know, if you'd have listened to me, everything would be okay. That to me is the kind of thing that a weak, insecure person would try to do to somebody to kind of control them, right? When you get around people like that, run, don't walk, get away from them. I'll give you an example. Now, this isn't exactly in the controlling side of things, but I'll give you an example of some really bad advice that happened to one of our listeners in the Discord room. His mentor told him after a new colony was installed, not to inspect it for 3 weeks. Now, this was not in July or August. This was like 2 weeks ago. During the peak of the swarm season, who in their right mind would give that kind of advice to somebody? It takes 16 days to turn an egg into a queen cell with a queen in it who is now emerging. And his mentor says, yeah, don't inspect for 21 days. I mean, that's insanity. That's crazy. And that's why I tell you guys all the time, right? Listen to people, nod your head up and down and go, oh, okay, yeah, that sounds good. Thank you. And then go ask somebody else the same question, right? Ask 4, 5, 10 people. Sometimes you're going to get 7 or 8 different answers and you got to try and find a way to pick the best one. But don't let somebody else, you know, poo-poo on your journey here. Anyway, I want you to think outside the box. If you have a cool idea, a cool way to lift something, move something, stack it, paint it, configure it, you know, whatever else is going on with your colonies, then do it. If you want a second opinion, ask a friend, ask a mentor, come into our Discord room, ask them, you know, shoot me an email, ask me. Just get feedback from people when you have questions or doubts, but don't go into this with the idea there's only one way to do things. Bees have survived thousands of years. I don't think you and I are going to be the ones that finally break them. Well, I mean, we got the whole herbicide pesticide thing going. I'm talking about as far as, you know, bee housing and taking care of them. I think they're going to figure it out too, right along with us. All right, so let's start talking about some steps and some things that should be common however you decide to position your hives. Let's kind of start from the ground up. The first thing I would be looking for is ground that is either level or it's in a location that you can make it level. When I say level, I kind of mean level, but maybe with a little bit of drainage to one side or another. That way you don't have water pooling in that area if it rains or you have some snow melt or whatever might be going on. And some people choose not to level and they just go ahead and install posts and then they use beams connecting the posts and they level from there. Whatever method or approach that you use to find some good level ground so that you have a place to set the hives up, that's what you're looking for. And again, making sure that you're, you know, X feet from the road, so many feet from the property line, neighbors, you've paid registration fees, you know, whatever else you got to do. You just want to make sure, like we talked about, that you're compliant. In addition to being level, I tend to position mine in places that are roughly maybe 20 to 50 feet from a wood line. This is just because this is what I have available. If all I have available is a big open field, I'm going to put them in a big open field and I'm not going to think twice about it. This is certainly not mandatory. I just like to provide them with a bit of a windbreak in the cooler times of year. And it also helps to give them a little bit of shade at some point during the day in the warmer months. Now, prior to putting everything in place, you want to consider some sort of weed management. I'm not talking about the weed management that some of you are thinking about right there. I'm talking about the kind that are going to grow all around the hives and make a mess and get up into your fence, your electric fence and other things. I know a lot of people like to put down cardboard, landscaping fabric, you know, whatever you need to put down first. You just want to have something down there to prevent or reduce the amount of weeds. At some point, those things are going to deteriorate and you're going to have weeds. You're going to have to cut around them, which we'll talk about, you know, a little bit later on. But the less time that you have to spend around there cutting grass, trimming around the bases, and agitating the bees, the happier all you are going to be. And I would strongly discourage the use of any commercial grass or weed killers for obvious reasons, but definitely keep the grass low around the hives if you can. When I was little, my grandmother had bird feeders and a bird bath in her backyard. Some of my favorite memories growing up were listening to her tell me everything she knew about the feathered friends that visited her yard daily. How amazing would it have been for us to be able to capture images and videos of that experience and to be able to share them with others? Well, if you're ready to take your backyard bird watching to the next level, FeatherSnap makes Wi-Fi-enabled smart bird feeders that blend the best of technology and nature. Get a high-def glimpse of your feathered friends with a top-of-the-line camera so every visitor can be seen with clarity and detail. A unique dual-feeder bin helps attract more species, and built-in solar panels keep your camera's battery going strong. FeatherSnap's mobile app creates a truly immersive experience allowing you to collect and organize your favorite pics and videos and earn badges along the way. Best of all, FeatherSnap offers expert-trained AI identification of more than 275 North American species thanks to their in-house ornithologist. Check them out today at FeathersnapCam.com. That's FeathersnapCam.com. As most of you know, I'm a big fan of the outdoors, and most of my time is dedicated to beekeeping and gardening-related discussions. But you probably did not know that one of my responsibilities as a kid was caring for our houseplants. Yes, part of my $5 a week allowance went towards making sure all of the houseplants were healthy and happy. We used to have shamrocks, Christmas cactus, philodendron, and more. Which leads us to today's podcast sponsor, and a special thanks to Palm Street. Palm Street is the best live shopping app for the plant lover community. You can buy and sell rare plants, crystals, ceramics, and other unique goods. Connect with trusted plant sellers and nurseries that sell nationwide. Shop 24/7 and with live human customer support. What I love most about Palm Street is joining a live stream where sellers walk through all the details and characteristics of the plants they're offering. You can get live answers to your questions and see what questions others have asked as well. It's such a great way to engage for buyers and sellers. And as a special offer, new users will receive $5 app credit, 10% off their first order, and up to $6 off shipping for 3 orders. Palm Street, available on Google Play or the App Store.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Another thing to consider is how and if you'll have access to these hives at your chosen location. So, like, will you ever need to move them at some point in time? I mean, they're really heavy. And even if you're young and you're in shape, you know, you got to pick some of these things up and carry them however far from where they are to where you're going to put them into a vehicle or tractor or whatever it might be to move them. So do you need to set these up in a place where you have access from a tractor or from another piece of equipment? You want to make sure you have room to get a push mower, maybe a lawn tractor in there to cut around everything. Little pro tip here, when you're cutting the grass around the beehives, go ahead and put that bee gear on. Your whole body will thank you because they will get angrified. I've arrogantly thought a couple of times, like, it'll be all right. I'll just go by real quick and everything will be okay. Turns out a bee can actually fly faster than a lawn tractor. So, little fun fact for you. Now, the actual direction that the hive is facing seems to be of less importance from, in my experience, generally speaking, during the season. In the winter, I prefer not to have my entrances facing west and north if I can avoid it, because that's the direction of the wind and the weather where I am. I think that's an important consideration. You can have driving winds from a storm that can just blow rain right up into that entrance. Or in the wintertime, you know, you still want to have the entrances open in some capacity to allow ventilation to come in to reduce condensation. But if you have excessive amounts of air blowing in, that will definitely impact their ability to thermoregulate inside the cluster. So that's another consideration that you'll want to keep in mind. The next thing to consider is how you're going to get them off the ground. We know that they're going to have to be off the ground, but how are you going to do that? And it doesn't really matter what you do as long as you do it somehow. You can use pallets and just place the hives on top of the pallets. You can use cement blocks, bricks, other types of masonry on the ground, and then set the hives on top of that. You can use cinder blocks, either vertically, a little bit less stable, or horizontally, then run a couple of 4x4 posts from one block to the other, and then set the hives on top of that. I've seen a lot of people who just take a post hole digger or a small auger, put some posts in the ground, you know, kind of do like a post and beam type construction, basically. And you put beams in there to level everything out, put all your hives on top of that, very sturdy. Whatever you can imagine, you can do it. This just reminded me of a memory from my granddad when I was a kid. I remember him quoting Norman Vincent Peale. He would say, "Anything the mind can conceive and believe, it can achieve." It's weird how those things kind of stick with you and just kind of pop into your head every now and then. He was always doing things like that, like Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich. He always had some of his quotes. Anyway, he was a good dude. All right, so if you can think about it, you can make it happen. If it's possible, do try to put a bit of a slant on that bottom board like we've talked about before so that everything is leaning towards the entrance to help with drainage. Anything that gets into the hive can hopefully hit the bottom board and run off. Not all configurations are going to allow for this. Like if you had an entrance on two separate colonies that were using the same bottom board, right? So you had an entrance on one side and an entrance on the other. Obviously, if you tilt it, one colony is going to be happy that everything's draining out and one's going to be not so happy because everything is not draining out. So try to get it as level as possible. Keep an eye on that bottom board for any kind of buildup of excess funk. And that is actually the technical term for it. It's just hive funk. I've actually seen some customized bottom boards that are built with a slant in each direction. It's kind of cool. So imagine a traditional bottom board divided down the middle lengthwise. And instead of the boards just being flat, the one is slightly tilted down one direction. The other one is slightly tilted the opposite direction, allowing drainage either way for both colonies. So I thought that was kind of neat. But again, it's kind of highly customized. I feel like that's going to probably end up costing twice as much as it would for a regular bottom board. So once they're off the ground and they're in a place that you're happy with, there's a few other considerations depending on where you live and what the weather's like. I've seen some people that have actually put a small roof over them. They've put, you know, 4x4 posts in the ground, sent them straight up, built a small little roof with some shingles, almost like you would see over a log pile. I think that's going a little bit too far. I don't think it's necessary, but you know what? Who cares, right? If that's what you want to do, then do it. I think it can prevent, you know, excess snow from piling up around the entrance and blocking the bees. I would think that if you just had some kind of a deflector, like if snow was an issue or a concern, you could kind of deflect the snow with something that came at maybe like a 45 or a 60 degree angle off the front of the hive so that the snow wouldn't build up right there at the entrance. Or make sure you have a upper entrance during the winter so that if snow does build up a couple of feet, they can still get in and out from the top. This is definitely not my area of expertise as being a guy on the coastal areas of the Mid-Atlantic, but use your imagination. If you want, you can even relocate them into a pole barn or something during the wintertime. Next thing on the list is a bear fence. I think this is an absolute must-have in some parts of the country. If this is something you need, you probably already know it. I think the recommended energy for bears is 1 joule of energy in your fence energizer. So I guess an energizer is kind of the technical word for it versus just fence shocker or a shocker thingy. But yeah, the 1 joule, I think, is what I had heard in a video that was talking about installing and setting up your own bear fence, and that should be enough to deter most bears. Outside of that, I really don't have much advice here other than to say that I did prefer the solid wire over the string wire. There's a wire that basically has like a regular type of string with a thin strand of a conductor wrapped around it. I found that the solid wire is much more reliable. That's all that I'm going to use moving forward. But the string style with that one thin conductor, it's actually really good for a temporary setup. Like if you were camping out somewhere and you had a portable one, like I have a battery powered one that you can just set up with a couple of these poles that are very much like a tent pole, and you secure the energized lines to this pole all the way around, and it runs off a couple D batteries. That's great for something temporary, or you're just setting up a bee yard for a short-term scenario. Nothing wrong with that. But if you're going to go long-term, I definitely recommend the solid metal wire. You also may want to consider some additional security. You know, aside from bears, there are other critters that will harass honeybees from time to time. If you live in an area with those types of animals, it might be a good idea to ratchet strap them down or use something else to secure them to whatever you have as your base. I mean, unless you have something like, you know, like a bear or a honey badger or whatever, I mean, they might just go ahead and tear open whatever you have and not think twice about it. But you also might be in an area where you have high winds or, you know, anything that may happen that could potentially cause the hive to leave the location where you've set it up. There's nothing wrong with throwing a strap around it to hold it down. Couple of other things to be mindful of, and this is going off slightly on a tangent, but still an important thing. As you get to like later in the summer, you may want to go ahead and consider putting a mouse guard in your hive. Particularly, this is a rural issue. Now, I live in a suburb. I've never had an issue with them in this suburb. I have had issues with them in other suburbs, but in the rural area where the apiary is, mice are all over the place. I definitely recommend putting that mouse guard in probably, again, like late summer time frame as they start looking around for their winter home. Now, most of all the advice I kind of threw out here was operating on the assumption that you have a decent amount of space and that you're able to put your bees somewhere that they'll be, you know, kind of out of the way. But there are some considerations that you should keep in mind for smaller lots or properties, or just in general, if you're doing this at your residence. Avoid putting them anywhere where someone might see them just walking up or driving past your house. Yes, it's a great conversation starter, but it can also be a stupid person magnet. Sometimes it's hard to tell which one you're dealing with at any given point in time, so play it safe and try to tuck them out of the way. Also, avoid putting them in or directly adjacent to walkways, driveways, other areas of ingress and egress. Anything that you can do to kind of minimize contact with passerbys or anybody who might randomly drop in. Most importantly, you do want to make sure you have a clear scout for the Girl Scouts, because my girls are all grown up and I still want my cookies, so I don't want anybody to get scared of the bees when they're coming by to drop off my Samoas. The real core of what we're trying to cover today was really focused on selecting the location and getting your bees there. Once the location's identified, you know, how you build the hives up and which components you use, that's really up to you, and it's kind of a different discussion. However, once you have everything in place, you can do what you want, whether it's nukes, 8-frame, 10-frame, vertical, horizontal, diagonal, whatever setup you want to go with, your foundation is in place and you can work from there. Now, the last note before I kind of wrap up today, I have a bit of a story for everyone about a listener who happens to be a neighbor of mine and a Discord member. It is a crazy story. I don't want to give away any spoilers, but I will be working on getting an episode together, hopefully over the next week. It might take two. But it'll be definitely episode 57, hopefully releasing on May 24th. I've got some resources I need to get lined up in preparation for this, but it's an important episode that you're not going to want to miss. I think it could arguably be the most important episode that you ever hear on beekeeping, and I'm really being serious, so please stand by for more on that. All right, everyone, that's going to wrap it up here for episode 56. I hope that this information is helpful for you. It's useful. I hope we covered everything. But check us out on YouTube. It's at Beekeeping for Newbies, N-E-W-B-E-E-S. We've had a great month of growth over there. We're going to continue to get the podcast episodes uploaded over there as well, bringing in some short and long form content. Hit us up on the Discord server. We got over 250 members in there who are pretty active. For the record, that is a free membership. You're not paying anything. Nothing that I do or offer has a fee associated with it. So, you know, have at it. Although I am in the process of writing a book, and that is going to have a fee to it. But it's probably still going to be cheaper than a cup of coffee at Starbucks. Yeah, well, one of the fancy ones. Like I said, the Discord server, you can find a link to that on the Beekeeping for Newbies website. About halfway down on the left, there's a link. And lastly, you can always feel free to drop me an email, jeff@beekeepingfornewbies.com, and let me know what we're missing. Let me know how we can help. And that's about all I got. Take care, folks. Be kind to one another, and I will see you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.